Thanks, Nicole. I really am interested in who's here. So I'm a lawyer. I'm going to talk a lot about legal issues and exceptions to the rules and all of this stuff. And it gets a little technical and complicated. And I'm going to make it as straightforward and as easy as possible. And the way that I can do that best, if I could hear, just know, are you working at the state, local level? How about anybody working at the state government? Raise your hand. Just a couple of folks. Local government? All right, a lot more. Great, great flow. How about academics? Okay, small handful. Who else is here? Advocacy, non-governmental organizations? Okay, about equal with local government organizations. Any categories I missed? Students? Okay, I'll put you in the quasi-academic, not researchers, but definitely in the academic mode. Great, great. So future workforce of tomorrow. I want to hear why you came. Why are you here? Have you had a particular challenge? You just general information? Have you been reprimanded because you're not allowed to do something that you did and didn't know? Not that I want people to... Give me the story. Give me the story. CPPW or...
California Department of Health.
Okay, and you work for CDPH and... You did something, they said that's lobbying, you can't be doing that from your government position?
Yeah, the right to it often, you want to have public meetings, and you need to run it up the chain.
Right.
And at this one time, I released a document regarding the Superfund fact that I need to do it, that's my job. So we told the reporter, I told my OGA office 3 months earlier that I was going to release this, and I even gave this person an early copy. Then a reporter called me. And I did not refer them to my Office of Public Affairs, but I just told her when my meeting would be. So I told my community meeting. So she showed up, and we didn't realize that an interview process would have been a better idea. She basically pitted me against the local water purveyor because there was a large amount of chlorine in the water system in the past. So there was this sort of headline thing.
Right.
This happened 2 years ago, and since then, we've had a much better relationship with our Office of Public Affairs, but we're constantly chained, and we just don't, we've had meetings canceled at the last minute because they thought that we were going to have too much controversy. I really don't know if it's going to be. Who else raised their hand?
Okay, so there's...
She's my supervisor, so basically, she knows, she's reflected the same thing.
Yeah.
We have issues, and I think she's probably there for the same reason. You want to know what actually are the legalities and issues.
Yeah, great.
And how does it all work in a broader aspect. So.
Great. Yeah, go. Another story.
Professor of Human Prevention, we're working on building our capacity for policy and advocacy work. We're a community-oriented organization, and we really try to push for federal funding for community-based projects, but we've seen that policy is a difficult thing for those folks.
I forgot to ask, are there anybody here from the federal government? Yeah, sorry about that. CDC? HHS?
HHS,
okay, yeah.
Non-official.
Right, right. But yes, a huge issue. Yeah. Wow, I love that. I'm not going to address that head on, but let me see if I can weave that in, because one of the distinctions we're going to make is what's legal and what's political. And a lot of what seems legal, it might be political power. And we'll talk about how you can use that with and without lobbying, and when you're lobbying so you know that you're doing it, and so you have the right kind of money, not federal money, for example. So, good. Go ahead. Right. Okay, we'll talk about what you can and cannot do with federal dollars and with other dollars. These are exactly what I'll get into. Like I said, I'm going to go through a number of rules and exceptions to the rules. Would you raise your hand if you just missed me there? Back up. Get me to back up, because these things, this learning is going to be cumulative. And so I don't want to lose you midway, and I'll give the punchline besides my last slide saying thank you very much. The slide immediately before that, and maybe I'll just leave that one up, is resources on our website. So this isn't your only chance. As a lawyer, and I work with a lot of lawyers, we go back to the books over and over again. All right, let me walk through the rules, step by step by step. It doesn't stick in our brain. For me, it's like carburetors. I know they've got something with air. It doesn't stick in my brain. It's one of those things that, even trained in how to read the rules, we go back to them over and over again. So if you find yourself at the end of today saying, wow, my head's a little spinning, you are completely normal. That happens all the time. There's ways that you can walk through these rules step by step, and I'm going to show you how to do that. And then there's lots of resources on our website, and several other really great non-governmental organizations will help you do this too. So let's jump in. Is that all right? Disclaimer, I'm a lawyer. I'm not your lawyer. There's going to be legal information, but no legal advice given. At least under California rules, I have to have a disclaimer if I'm not giving legal advice. And I have no conflicts of interest. So Change Lab Solutions, it's change for social change, laboratories of democracy. This is a concept out of the law. I was so glad to see local government, so many local government folks here, because the idea is let's experiment at the local level. Let's learn, and then we filter things up that really work. And we see a lot of that going on around the country. And that's Change Lab Solutions particularly supports local government, but also state and federal government, and practical solutions for the common good. Our theory of change is a health in all policies. We have deep expertise, particularly on chronic disease control, but not exclusively. And we work with health agencies and all other aspects of civic life to improve community health outcomes, with a particular focus on health equity and addressing the burden of disease where it's greatest in communities. We offer all sorts of wraparound services to people we work with and partners at every stage. You can learn a lot more on our website. I think we probably have the largest website of tools in the country, in the world, for chronic disease prevention, all sorts of practical tools, model laws, model policies, all of which you can use free of charge for download. So what we're going to do today, what is lobbying? What are the common restrictions on lobbying? We're going to distinguish between philanthropy, if you get money from philanthropy and you get money from the federal government, or if you're at local level, it would be the state to local government too. What is not lobbying? And this is going to be where I really want you to zero in. What is not lobbying? Because anything I say that is not lobbying, you can do to your heart's content and never violate a rule. And then we'll have some Q&A and really bring in the Q&A all throughout. I'm going to ask you some questions too. So let's start. This is probably a familiar pyramid to most folks. I call it the Frieden Pyramid. I'm sure it's got some other more fancy name. But notice when you go up the increasing behavior, individual effort needed to, this is addressing the social determinants of health and decreasing population impact increasing population impact lower down. Working at the socioeconomic factors, housing, poverty, education, changing the context to make individuals' default easier, fluoridated water, access to healthy foods, bikeable, walkable communities. These two particularly, that's where you're going to have your biggest population impact. It requires working on public policy. We just, the way our environment is structured, we have default conditions, poor sidewalks, no access to healthy food, exposure to secondhand smoke, all of these are contexts in which we live that cause disease, and it takes public policy to address them. You can't educate somebody out of not having clean water, you have to, or not having fluoridated water. You got to make public policy and get it done. It's not a matter of education. Education, I'm trained as a health educator. Before going to law school, I went to public health school and worked as a health educator for a local government for many, many years. And so I'm a real believer in it, but we used education to move public policy in that role because that's how we could have the biggest impact. So to really get at that population impact, we have to be addressing public policy. We also, and I want to remind us of this, we have First Amendment rights to petition the government, to assemble with groups of people, to speak on whatever issue we want, so long as it isn't, you know, going to cause harm. We can't, you know, yell fire in the movie theater. But we can say all sorts of things, and this is highly protected under the First Amendment to our Constitution. So I want to remember that. It doesn't mean that we can do whatever we want on the job and say whatever we want on the job, but we never lose our individual rights as citizens to be able to speak to government. Time and place that you speak to government, you can't always use your role as a government employee to do that. It'll depend, and we'll get into that. But you can always do it as an individual citizen. And there have been studies done. A researcher at Johns Hopkins looked at every state law, all 50 laws in 50 states, looking at lobbying. Are there any restrictions on lobbying for government employees in that state? And the answer is no, none. Because you are a government employee, you do not give up your First Amendment rights. There's a concept in First Amendment, time, place, and manner. What time, where place, what manner you're doing, you don't lose your rights as a citizen to be able to speak to your elected officials. So we'll tease out what you can do on the job, but off the job, you have every First Amendment right now as you did before you entered government service or academic service if you're in. First Amendment rights. Okay, what's lobbying? I'm going to come back to this over and over and over again. Remember I said you got to go read the rules. Read the rules. This is the most important rule that you have to read. This is the definition of lobbying. It's a communication with a government official or employee who participates in the informing legislation that reflects a point of view on specific legislation. So we'll come back to this over and over again. What's communication? Oops. Let me just see. I want to make sure I'm going through these one by one. I hope I have the most current. Okay, we'll go through it. It is coming up. Okay. There's two types of lobbying. There's direct lobbying and there's grassroots lobbying. We'll come back to all of these. Direct lobbying, a communication directly with a government official to influence specific legislation. Communication, you're sitting down in the office, in the hallways, talking directly to a government official. A communication, conversation, email, phone call, letter, tweets, any sort of communication, modern or traditional communication, that's with an elected or with a government official. What does a government official mean? Is it just the elected member? No, it's far broader than just the elected member, and this is something that really have to pay attention to. It's government, it's a staff person. If that staff person takes part in forming legislation. Now if you're using philanthropy dollars, there's a big distinction between legislation and regulation. Can somebody tell me, just in the room, what's the difference between legislation and regulation? Legislation is the bill that's passed by the Congress of the United States, your state legislature. At the local level, it's really blended, but the city council or town council, however you're organized. Regulations are the rules interpreting that legislation. So we have, under the Affordable Care Act, we had menu labeling passed. That was legislation. It was a rider to the Affordable Care Act that, you know, there's going to be menu labeling. It says something broad. It's maybe a paragraph long. Now, the FDA has been spending years and years and years figuring out the regulations for that. Who's it going to apply to? For how big are the shops? And is it going to be to movie theaters? And, you know, and how, what size does the point size have to be on the menu labeling itself with the calories? All these details are done in regulations. Notice that this, for nonprofit dollars, for philanthropy dollars, is only legislation. So you have to pass, if you're going to lobby, you have to pass all four tests. Communication with a government official, reflecting a particular point of view, making a direct appeal. I want you to pass SB 123. Particular point of view. Grassroots lobbying is a communication with the general public to take action. So here, to all members of Congress, concerned citizens, we call on you to stand for it, yada, yada, goes on and on. This could, you could send this out. It's a communication through email blasts from APHA asking you to take action. That's grassroots lobbying. So APHA might not be talking directly to Congress, although they're probably doing both direct lobbying and grassroots lobbying, but they're asking you, would you talk to your members of Congress? So let's see if we can tease this out a little bit. The health officer sends a letter to local congresswoman in support of House Resolution 123 to restore PITCH funding. What kind of lobbying is that? Direct or grassroots? It's direct, yeah. The health department sends a letter to members of the Health Equity Coalition urging them to write a letter to Congress in support of H.R. 123. That's grassroots. Is there a communication? What's the communication? What's the government official? Either of them. Yeah, the second one is urging them to write a letter to Congress, their congressperson. Is there a piece of legislation?
It's a member of the Health Coalition.
You're asking the health equity, so this is the grassroots part, the coalition, to take action. You're asking them to take action in support. You're reflecting a view in support of a piece of legislation. You have to have all four. Now let me change this up a little bit. Let's say it was the Health Equity Coalition urging them to weigh in on the menu labeling regulations. What the FDA is doing, they're delaying again. I just heard they're delaying yet again for another year. What if you wanted to object to that? Don't delay anymore, it's been 5 years already. It's not legislation, so it's not lobbying. This is using philanthropy funds. What about the health officer tells the congresswoman about the great work being done with the PITCH funding? It's not lobbying. Why? Why is it not lobbying? There's no legislation. There's no specific action. There's a communication with the government official, absolutely. But there's no view on a specific piece of legislation, so it's not lobbying. Pay close attention to that. You can talk about all the good work that you're doing at the local level all the time and never once lobby. That is not lobbying. That's the job of many state and local health departments, is to talk with elected officials about what's going on in the community. All governments and nonprofits are allowed to conduct lobbying activities. I'm going to back this up again. Notice, we've been talking about what's lobbying. You are allowed to lobby. You have to use the right kind of money to lobby. Your lobbying activities may be restricted by a funder or a particular state or local law, and you need to have access to legal counsel if you're confused to figure out what you're doing. So I'm going to give general rules, but if you get confused, you need to figure it out. You're allowed to lobby. You have to have the right kinds of funds to lobby. General funds, if you work at the state or local level, state and local governments lobby all the time. They hire lobbyists. If you go to Washington, every state has lobbyists there. They're paid lobbyists, and they use general funds, unrestricted dollars. They don't use federal funds to do that, for example. So here are the common restrictions on lobbying. This is for philanthropy. So we get a lot of funds from Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, the Kresge Foundation. These are philanthropies, and they are forbidden to use their dollars for lobbying. They get tax-exempt status, and they can't use the benefits of that. The trade-off they're doing is we get the tax-exempt status and we give up our First Amendment rights to lobby. They are forbidden to use their dollars for lobbying. Anybody who gets money from them can't use their dollars for lobbying. Same's true for federal dollars. You can have other dollars. You see the American Cancer, Heart, and Lung Associations, they have donations that are given to them. Somebody dies and writes them in their will. Those are called unrestricted dollars. You can do almost all the lobbying you want with those dollars. Absolutely no, because they're not at the benefit of the tax exemption from the philanthropy. The use of funds is likely to be restricted in your grant or contract. So if you get philanthropy dollars, it'll say right in your contract, I almost guarantee you. Now, there are kinds of philanthropy, like community foundations, where there's a whole bunch of donors. A community foundation usually has rich people in the area that put money into a pot. You're allowed to lobby with community foundation dollars. The distinction is, like with Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, it's one single funder, and that funding group can't have that much influence to be able to lobby. But the benefit of community foundations is lots of people put money in, and you can lobby with those dollars. So you've got to review your contract. It'll be very clear. They do not hide the ball on this. It's very straightforward language, whether you're restricted from using their funds to lobby. So review them carefully, and non-philanthropic and foundation funds, like community foundations, like donations, like if you do a major donor appeal, you can definitely use those funds for lobbying. And that's going to be the secret to all of this, is know what kind of money you have and when you're using it. Grants from federal government agencies prohibit grantees from using lobbying for both direct and grassroots lobbying. That's true for philanthropies, too. But in all of this, there are exceptions, and grantees may use non-governmental funds to conduct lobbying activities. We're going to talk about the exceptions. In the federal government, there are more levels of rules. There's the U.S. Constitution, there are statutes, there are special riders, there are regulations, there's guidance documents. I mean, honestly, it goes on and on and on, it'll make your head spin. I'll draw your attention to this, and you'll see a connection at the end in the bottom left-hand corner. Feldman Tucker is a law firm in Washington. They represent the National Association of Community Health Centers. They really specialize in the cost accounting principles for lobbying, and if you need really detailed assistance, I suggest that you go to them. We've got some of their resources on our website, but they can help you figure out your cost accounting to make sure you're tracking lobbying properly. But here's the federal rules. These rules really kind of jumped up in our face after the Communities Putting Prevention to Work money went through, the stimulus money with the recession, and there were all sorts of claims made that state and local governments were impermissibly lobbying with federal government funds, and there were going to be triple damages, and people were going to go to jail, and it was just absolutely made us all crazy. I'm going to read this to you because it was scare tactics to chill state and local government and community-based activities to improve community health. And it's really important to understand what's a scare tactic and what's real. So here's the language. And you see the green, it's really going to pull that out. No part of any appropriation contained in this act or transferred pursuant, this is the Prevention and Public Health Fund, shall be used to pay the salary or expense of any grant or contract recipient or agent acting for such recipient, designed to influence the enactment of legislation, appropriations, regulation, we're on federal dollars now, regulation, administrative action, or executive order proposed pending before Congress or any state government, state legislature, local legislature, or legislative body. It's really pretty sweeping, quite sweeping. And it's hard to understand, and it had a huge chilling effect. I will say we've looked at this is the equivalent. This is in HHS, Appropriations Act. We've looked at appropriations for all sorts of other federal agencies. There's nothing like this. Nothing like this at all, even close to this kind of restriction in other federal appropriations. They've really zeroed in on public health advocacy, quite frankly, starting with the tobacco wars, 30, 40 years ago, and right up through the present time as we start people work on alcohol and beverages and foods. It is directly related politically to successful public health advocacy, closing it down as much as possible. So notice, legislation, appropriations, regulations, administrative action, executive orders, Congress, state, local, it's really pretty sweeping. So bottom line rule, if you're using federal dollars, you can't lobby with those dollars. You can lobby. You just can't use federal dollars. You can't be paying your salary, for example, with federal funds while you lobby. You need to have donations. You need to have general funds from tax receipts that your local government gets. You need, if you're an academic, you need some sort of funding. Or if you're an academic, you just don't bill your time to a federal grant. You bill your time someplace else and you do it as a volunteer. You can't use federal funds to lobby. Bottom line, yeah, Beva.
I have a question on optics on this because we do have a federal grant. A portion of my time, a very small portion of my time, is on it. And our program officer has suggested that I can't do any lobbying even if I have discretionary dollars because I have to play a principal role as a director.
That is a political statement, not a legal statement. So that legally, that's not accurate. What you need to do is show, and what we do in my office, because we got a lot of federal money, a lot of philanthropy money, is we have some of our reserve account that we use for lobbying, and we have on our timesheets, and this is all going to come down to time reporting, cost reporting, we put, if it's lobbying, everything we do for lobbying, and we pull that from our reserve account, so we have a guaranteed way, and we have the paperwork backing it up, showing that we've used the right kind of money for lobbying. So politically, they might ask you to do that, but that's not a legal requirement. And you can push back if it's really, if you're feeling hampered and you've got the right kind of money. You're very powerful. Veva is a very powerful person in California, non-profit, non-governmental. Her voice carries a lot of weight. We need her to lobby sometimes. So what are the exceptions? And remember at the beginning I said I'm really going to zero in on exceptions because this is where all this worry, 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 no, no, no. What are the exceptions to those rules, which means that you can take action? Let's look at these. Okay, remember, you have to have all four. I said I was going to come back to this over and over again. If one of these elements is not present, it is not lobbying. Educational campaigns. The community meeting from the guy from California Department of Public Health, holding community meetings, educating people about what's in the drinking water, this is not lobbying. It might make your community, your public affairs office nervous because there might be controversy. People don't like having perchloroethylene in their water and they might not want that. I can't remember if that's what you said, but there was some toxic chemical. Highly politically charged. It is not lobbying. Because unless at that community meeting you say, here, you know, you're encouraging people to make a communication with an elected official on a specific piece of legislation with support or, you know, you have to have all four elements. And if you don't have, if you're just telling people what's in drinking water, you've got a communication. Maybe there's an elected official who comes to the community meeting. But if there's no specific legislation with voicing an opinion on it, an urge to take action for or against, it's not lobbying. So there's legal issues and there's political issues. And I can't give you much information of how to manage the politics of your particular situation, but it's important to know what's legal and what's political because you have different strategies. So community meetings, educating, and even if it's the advantages and disadvantages of different policies. We know that, you know, smoke-free workplaces are better than not. There's an advantage to that from health. Here's the science that tells us about it. You can definitely do that. Encourage them to take action by contacting an elected official puts you into lobbying. But talking about the epidemiology and science, about different policy options, which work best, how much should we raise the soda tax? Well, studies show that 1 cent will get us X, 2 cents will get us Y. This is what happened in Mexico. It's not lobbying. That's information. That's providing information. Really important distinction. This is the role of government agencies to inform the public. Sharing best practices and success stories. What worked on pitch? What we did with community transformation grants? How we cleaned up the last hazardous waste site? What happened after we ensured everybody got vaccinated to our whooping cough epidemic? Best practices, success stories, sharing it with the public or with government officials. This is not lobbying. Communication, yes. Government official, maybe. Specific piece of legislation and a view on that specific piece of legislation. Even if there's a specific piece of legislation they're looking at, if you don't make that those final statements, and I encourage you to vote yes or to vote no on, you know, Senate Bill 123, you can provide information. Here's what's worked. Just want to let you know what's worked as you all make your decisions. You have to have all four for it to be lobbying. Coalition building. How many people here work in coalitions? It's been everybody at working at the local level and a lot of people at the state level. Coalition building is not lobbying. That might be creating political will by getting constituents informed. But unless you're doing the call to action on a specific piece of legislation, you're not lobbying. Now, what happens a lot is you'll have American Cancer, Heart, Lung, Diabetes, some non-governmental group that has lobbying training and dollars in the coalition. And they'll say, listen, we should pass a law on that. We should strengthen our smoke-free workplace law. Let's do that. We'll pull down a model policy from the Change Lab Solutions website and let's start using it. And I'm like, yes. The government officials have to be careful at that point. If you start moving towards lobbying, it's going to take lobbying to improve your smoke-free workplace. You got to let other leadership take the lead. That other leadership who have lobbying dollars, who can mobilize, can do grassroots lobbying, make sure people come out and in support, line up the residents. You can't do that as a government. You've got to use, that's why coalitions are so important, because you have to have, the mom on the PTA, who's, I'm going to call all the parents. I'll send out an email on my private connection. That person, she's a citizen. She can do whatever she wants. We need better food in our schools, and we got to tell the school board to get it for us. That person can do all the lobbying she wants. You need that leadership development. One of the most important things we can do as public health officials is engage the community and develop leaders, because it's going to take policy to change the environment to be healthier, and it's going to take the ability to lobby. It doesn't mean that government has to do it. But you could bring the coalition together, you can inform them, you can engage them. All those really critical, 10 essential elements of public health you can do. And then somebody's going to have to take it the next step. Somebody who can lobby, if you can't lobby on the job. When I worked for local government, we were doing tobacco control, and our board of supervisors passed the first jurisdiction-wide tobacco control ordinance. This is ancient history, back in the 1980s. I worked with Larry Cohen in the Prevention Institute. We were co-workers. And our board of supervisors passed this. They wanted every city, we had 18 cities in our county, to do it too. We were the health department for the whole shebang. And so I was allowed to lobby. I was using county funds, with their own funds, directed by the Board of Supervisors to get all the cities on board with this policy. So, you know, you can, we had the right kind of money. It wasn't federal money, it wasn't philanthropy money, it was general fund money from tax revenues that the Board of Supervisors wanted to have happen. So, you know, you really, this is why you've got to look at what kind of funding you have and make sure that you can do it. So it might be, if you're under instruction by your state government or your local government to get a piece of policy passed and you've got the right kind of money, you might be able to lobby as a government employee. I certainly was able to do that. Broadly sharing evidence-based policy approaches. So here are two model laws from Change Lab Solutions. Healthy food retailers, healthy food zone. This is model legislation. We developed model legislation with Robert Wood Johnson Foundation funds, and it's not lobbying. What we do is we educate. If you want to have healthier foods in your communities, we've got probably 20 different ways of what you can do it. Example, a couple of them. There's all sorts of different things you can do, and here's the model legislation to get you started. We can definitely do that, and it's not lobbying. There's no specific legislation there. There's no HR 123 on it, and we're not making a call to action. We're telling you, if you're interested, why don't you read this? It's a piece of education. But notice, it's model laws and policies that we're putting up there. Now, if we were to take this model law and policy and turn it into a piece of legislation to introduce into your town, we're doing that work right now with Voices for Healthy Kids. The American Heart Association has joined up with Robert Wood Johnson on childhood obesity prevention. The American Heart Association is giving us non-philanthropic dollars to do that, some of their donations that come in. So we're really careful when we tailor it specifically to State X or Community Z, we use the right kind of money to get that job done. But sharing information, if you were to take one of these and you work at the county level and share it with all your cities or you share it with your elected officials, you know, I heard from, you know, Susie Q that she's interested in getting healthy food in our community, healthier food. Here's a whole bunch of different ways that could be done from Change Lab Solutions. You do it as information and you give it to them, you make it available. We'll talk about making it available to all the elected officials. You can't give it to just the Democrats or just the Republicans or just the ones you like. You got to make it widely available to everybody. Our materials have to be up on the website. Anybody can download them. They're available to the entire world who wants them, not just selected people who we piecemeal it out to because they're our friends. No, we do it for everybody. You can. It's not lobbying. Other allowed activities, and I'd love it if somebody, educating the public about personal health behaviors. What's an example of educating the public on personal health behaviors? Smoking's bad for you, right, not lobbying. Communicating, even if there's a piece of legislation on smoke-free workplaces, communicating to the public about their health risks and consequences. So if you've got contaminated water and you're letting people know there's some risks here, it's not lobbying. Working with private sector organizations about voluntary institutional changes without public policy. Let's get the vending machines and the workplace vending machines to be healthy. Big push to get hospitals to have healthy food. Oh my God. You know, let's start walking the talk. That's not lobbying. These are, you know, nonprofit, sometimes for-profit institutions. It takes absolutely, there's no government involvement. Lots of faith-based organizations are having healthy congregations, getting healthy food in their congregations, not lobbying. You can do all that work without any restrictions whatsoever. Again, if you don't have a piece of legislation in these instances, it's not lobbying. So almost all, I hope you're right now feeling, almost all I do in public health, I can keep doing without restrictions. Yeah?
Okay, so a couple of strange things. So I've met with Roger, I sit on what is the advisory board for County Board of Health. And we know that our city and county is looking at choices for long-range planning, transit, or a variety of other things. So we are currently putting together a white paper on actually this board that I sit on includes two county board members. But we're putting together a white paper explaining the various benefits and Medicaid as they go through this planning process. So it's not legislation, it's a plan, but it will have, of course, you know, once they choose, if, you know, it's an adopted plan. I don't think that's lobbying, but I think it's just a really interesting, lots of confusing thing that it turns out that I actually am employed by a nonprofit academic institution who then contracts with the health department, and that's how I get this position I'm in. So there's all sorts of weird connections. I'm sure I'm not alone in that.
You're not, and I love it. It's such a great fact pattern because these fact patterns come up all the time. It is complicated, and you have to read the rules. I'm not done talking about all the rules yet, so we might be able to go just on these four, but let's say it is all four, yeah? Because whether zoning and these kinds of plans are lobbying or not really depends on state law, and so I don't know what state you're from, and I don't, even if I knew, I wouldn't know what the law is. Let's say it does meet all of those four. Okay, hold that question because I'm gonna address exactly where you need to go right now. Even if all four elements, it won't be lobbying if it's nonpartisan study, research and analysis, or an invitation to testify. Okay, so here's an exception to the lobbying. Yes, let's just pretend that is lobbying, because it could be depending on this and that and the other thing. If you fall into one of these exceptions, it's not lobbying. Okay? What's nonpartisan? Yeah?
The second one on that previous slide, did you take a position?
Yes.
Legislation, you're invited to testify?
Yes. So I'll get into that very specifically. So you can have all four elements. So you have you say yes, vote yes on HR 123. What is nonpartisan study, research, and analysis? It could be, I would posit, a white paper that's being done with community input and pros and cons and all of this stuff. Nonpartisan analysis, study, and research on a policy alternative, specific legislation that may express support for a specific policy. So here's something that we've done, digital food marketing to children and adolescents. You know, we're trying to regulate what's going on to kids. This is highly controversial. Lots of legal issues involved, and we sort them all through in a really rigorous way. What is it? It has to be independent, balanced, and objective. Fair to both sides of an issue. Full and fair exposition of the pertinent facts. Allows a reader to draw his or her own independent opinion and conclusion. The author may have his or her own conclusions too. You don't have to be, so here's the facts and not weigh in on what they mean for health. You're allowed to weigh in on what they mean for health. The conclusion is based on evidence and facts, not unsupported opinion, broadly distributed to the public and not directed to only one side of an issue. So this white paper is a great example. My guess is that there will be testimony. We'll talk about testimony. It's going to be a blend of both. But you're going to have a report that you're going to put up on the website or make sure that anybody who wants it has access to it some way or another. Certainly all the pertinent elected officials are going to have access to it. You're going to look at all the trade-offs. You know, we do more transit-oriented development, but then price of property goes up, and that's a challenge for displacement. You know, there's all these complicating factors that you're going to start digging into and laying out in a study-like, research-like. Here's another for the academic in the back of the room. Hello, raise your hand here, because this is probably what you're doing. And you put it out there, even though it's a communication with a government official having a specific opinion on a piece of legislation, even though if you can meet these criteria of nonpartisan study, research, and analysis, it's not lobbying. It's not lobbying. Examples. Model ordinance for something very controversial, like SSB, sugar-sweetened beverage taxes. If you go onto our website and look up sugar sweetened beverage, we proceed the model legislation with a fair discussion of the controversies and the issues from the public health perspective, from the small business perspective, from the Association of American Beverage Association perspective, all the different strategies and opinions and facts and figures are put out, and you can draw your own opinion, and here's the model policy that goes with it. It's not lobbying. Shared use agreements, contract language. Shared use agreements, you open up school playgrounds. It's a contract. All of those, what's the benefits of opening up playgrounds? What's the downside? You have to, there might be more vandalism and graffiti, this kind of business. All those concerns outlined in it. Toolkits on improving government procurement, getting the government to purchase healthier foods, along with model contracts. These results of policy scans might be something that an academic institution would do. What are some other examples? So we have one from, where are you from?
Rochester, Minnesota.
Rochester, Minnesota. What about clean water? I mean, you present to the legislature the results of whatever community you're working with and the contaminated water, and you compare that to, what the CDC says, or I'm not sure all the bodies that regulate carcinogens in drinking water, but there's plenty of them, and you lay that out, even if they're considering a piece of legislation to improve drinking water in California. I don't know if people could hear, but she's in Nebraska working on alcohol policy. Wow, you're a brave woman. It's great. And she pulled together all the data and information and sent it out.
Yeah, so a policy analysis group looked at both states, all state laws, rules, regulations, looked at case laws, and then what policy analysis and then from that, then
right. And if it's nonpartisan study, research, and analysis, wow, what a great example. I want to get your card afterwards because we're doing some work with alcohol at CDC and we need examples. There's not a lot of people who move alcohol policy. It takes a thick skin. Yeah, a lot of political pushback on that. Lots. Great example. Any other examples? How about the academic researcher in the back? What kind of research do you do? And tell us what you'd like to do with it. So package it in nonpartisan study, research, and analysis, and you can do whatever you want with it, and it's not lobbying. Yeah? What do you think? You'd have to meet these standards, right? It has to be balanced and objective, fair to both sides, looking at it this way and that way. These are squishy rules, like you often see in legislation, a reasonable attempt to do. You have to be a reasonable person. What does that mean? Squishy. A significant impact. What does significant mean? Squishy. These are squishy rules. It's not hard and fast. But you got to do your best. You got to show an attempt to be balanced, to be fair to both sides, so that a reader can draw his or her own conclusion. There's lots of people out there that think there's too much government anyhow. We've had some public hearings in California about, complete streets legislation. It's not the role of government to nudge us to be healthy. Don't encourage us to be healthy. Stay out of my life, government. And there's people who think that. So, people could disagree with you. And you got to, play with both sides. And a health impact assessment often does that. And you'd want to frame it within that context. If it's just one-sided, just taking one side of an issue and showing that impact, it's probably not nonpartisan analysis. So you've got to go an extra effort. Invitations to testify. So let's say you've done a one-sided health impact assessment. Let's say it is lobbying because it will be a communication to a government official on a specific piece of legislation that you're expressing an opinion. And it is one-sided, so it's not nonpartisan study, analysis, research. If you get an invitation to testify, a request, and I would like to say a written request, of a government or legislative body for a technical or factual presentation of information to a government decision makers regarding specific legislation or a legislative proposal. Is the request related to proposed specific pending legislation? Is the requester involved with the legislative process or a government official, such as drafting, sponsoring, voting, or commenting on the legislation? Can this person provide a written request? I'll talk about that a little bit more. Here's an example. Written on behalf of the government or legislative body. This isn't written from, you know, assemblyperson Susie Q, come talk to me. I hear him writing, come talk to me, tell me what you think with your health impact assessment that's one-sided. No, this has to be on behalf of the committee, the public health subcommittee of, you know, whatever, the committee. All members of the committee, on behalf of the committee. So it becomes nonpartisan. Requests for information and recommendations. Response will be available to all members of the legislative committee or the body. So it's got to be from the chair of the committee or whatever level, the mayor on behalf of the city council. You know, it's going to be a fact-specific analysis here. You want it in writing. It can be an email, doesn't have to be snail mail. But you have to meet these three requests on behalf of the government or legislative body, request for information and recommendation. So you, in both instances, whether it's nonpartisan study and research and analysis or this, you can make your opinion known and responsibly available to all members. So now, even if you had that question in the back of your mind, am I lobbying or not lobbying? How do I handle this? If you are lobbying, try to get yourself to fall within an exception by doing that extra work to get your opinion into nonpartisan. That takes a lot of extra work. My staff attorneys don't like it. Because why are we making the arguments for the Beverage Association when we're doing X, Y, and Z? You know, we feel like we're wasting our money. And I'll tell you, we get funded by the California Department of Public Health to do tobacco control. They really don't want us making arguments for the tobacco industry. Why smoke-free? But you go the extra effort, and then you're sure that you're not lobbying. And from my perspective as a CEO, I don't want any of those big industries coming down on my organization saying we're violating the law with government funds, so we're going the extra effort. So you have to fall into one of these exceptions. I want to talk about extra things to know for if you've got federal funds. It's called normal and recognized executive legislative relationships. Participation in policymaking and administrative processes within the executive branch of government, the same level of government. Remember we talked about those federal rules, 503B going through, it was, you know, all levels of government, federal, state, local. It was legislation, it was regulation, it was executive orders. Remember we showed that slide. Well, what can you do about that? So here's back to the same language, dense, complex, what are we talking about kind of language. So the top part of this is what we read earlier. You can't do anything. We're going to squish you down on all sorts of fronts with federal dollars. This is federal dollars. Other than four. That means exception, that's the code word, big exception to this no lobbying. Normal and recognized executive legislative relationships or the participation of an agency, blah, 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 a government in policymaking and administrative processes within the executive branch of that government. I want to unpack this a little bit. What does normal and recognized executive legislative relationships mean? Anybody want to make a wild guess? Think about if you work for a government agency, who do you normally talk with? Does the legislature normally ask the health department for input on pending legislation? I've seen a head nod. Yeah, the legislature normally does that. Normal and recognized legislative relationships. County Public Health Department typically provides an annual state of health report to elected officials with recommendations for legislative action. If that typically happens, that's normally and recognized. And if you're using federal funds, you're allowed to engage in normal and recognized legislative discussions. State legislative liaisons typically consult about local health agencies about pending legislation. Can you think of other examples? You gotta have a track record of normal and recognized. I can't tell you what that is. I don't know what it is in your state. I don't even know what it is in the state of California because I don't work for the state of California. But you gotta have it, and this is where you wanna talk to your local attorneys. Yeah.
And if you're new and you develop, how do you point to that track record?
It's not you as an individual. It's
well, the organization is new.
Give me an example, because this is going to
just a fledgling organization that's starting to advocate on specific issues. So they are on an emerging issue.
So this would be a non-governmental organization.
Yes.
Well, you want to look to how other non-governmental organizations have done it in the past.
So,
but better, much better that you get the invitation to testify.
So if other similar organizations typically consult with local government agencies, then it would be fine for you to do that.
Well, it's normal. Let me just back up here. Normal and recognized executive legislative relationships. This is within government. This isn't outside of government. Executive legislative legislature, the executive is the agency, it's the health department. It's the executive agency. So this is really just going to government communications, the local health department to the legislature, to the city council, the state health department to the legislature. If there's a normal and recognized executive legislative communication, so it would not apply to nonprofit, non-governmental organizations or academic institutions, unless maybe it's a state, the University of California, University of Missouri,
So even though they're getting government.
Yes, this is only the exception. So this exception does not apply to non-governmental organizations. Normal and recognized executive legislative relationships, and these are, there's the executive, the judicial, and the legislative branches of government. We're talking about executive legislative relationships here. Can you think of other typical communications that might happen? This is really a place that I'd encourage you to connect with a local attorney. This normal and recognized, again, squishy language, no clear, hard, fast rules. You must make 3 presentations every 6 months, where you could really measure. It's not that. It might be an annual state, but it happens all the time. We've always done it. We're always going to do it. Participation in policy and administrative processes. Government officials may communicate with anyone within the same government, same level of government, about policy or legislation. A state health agency liaison may discuss legislation with the governor's office, even if it's not normal and recognized, but it's state to state. You can do that. Use federal funds to do that, written right into federal appropriations law. A county planner may discuss updates to the zoning code with the county public health department. So back to the woman from Rochester, Minnesota, even if it's federal funds that are doing this, federal transportation dollars helping you do your planning, you're allowed to talk to your other county folks about using those federal dollars to do your job. It's an exception to what otherwise might be considered lobbying. Yeah. Thank you for asking that question. What's an administrative process? So we talked a little bit earlier about the distinction between legislation and regulation. So the legislation is passed by the elected officials and then sent to administrative agencies to put in all the details. You know, we're doing menu labeling. Well, you know, all those questions of who's covered and what size font and on and on and on have to go to an administrative agency, in that case the Food and Drug Administration. It could be a state or local health agency. These are administrative that administer the law and implement it in the world. And it's that process. What is our zoning code going to look like? That's an administrative process of putting that piece of policy together. So it's not non-legislative action by a government agency or administrative processes. Any questions on that? I told you at the beginning your head's going to circle around a little bit. Oh God, what am I doing? This way, and I'll tell you, in my office, I've got 15 attorneys on my staff. We go back to the books every time. Is it a communication with a government official? All right, let's say it's all yes to all those things. Then we start going through the exceptions. Can we fall into this exception? What does it take to mean? And you just have to work the process. It doesn't stick in your brain. It's very fact-specific. You go through the rules. So a county planner may discuss updates to the zoning code with the public health department, even if they're all funded by the federal government. A city public health department employee may discuss specific legislation with the city manager. City manager needs to know what the health department thinks about this. I mean, they don't want to be going off. You've got, you know, community transportation dollars, or community transformation, not transportation, I've got transportation. Transformation dollars are pitch or reach dollars, and your coalition's working on public policy, and you're not going to do any of the lobbying, but the city manager wants to know what the health department, you've been listening to this, you're sitting on the epidemiology, you've dug deep into our neighborhoods, is this good for us or not? You absolutely can tell the city manager or the elected officials what you think, even if you've got federal dollars, because you're at the same level of government. So back, if people were in the communities putting prevention to work days, when, you know, treble damages and illegal use of federal dollars, BS. Fall right into this exception, telling the elected officials, city health department to city elected officials, state health department to state elected officials. Now, if the city were to tell the state, and you start jumping levels of government, you've got a different challenge. You can't do that. But you can go have open communication. You have to have open communication between your same level of government. I'll tell you a challenge, though, and it's a challenge in a lot of states, including California, where we have county health departments. We don't have city health departments. We have a handful of city health departments. And what happens when the county's working with, there's 87 cities in Los Angeles County, that's a lot of cities. Are they the same level of government when there's only one health department? Everybody's county employees, but there's no Huntington Beach Health Department. There's just LA County Health Department. This is, again, where you gotta, I could make huge number of good arguments, yes, at the same level of government, because there's a contract between them. The county is providing the services to the cities, and so it's the same, it's equal to the same level of government, and there's no other health department in the city. But you really have to talk to your local council about that. What if you got it wrong? Oh my God, we got a letter saying treble damages and we're all going to go to jail for false claims against the federal government. This happened in real life, you know, 5 years ago. Totally panic went throughout public health. I see Veva nodding her head. There might be others in the room. You know, it was really scary. Take a deep breath. Take a chill. Chances are you didn't lobby. If you did lobby and you made a mistake, what you need to do, and really the best non-legal advice I can give you, is you've got to have funding codes where you put your, if you're going to lobby, you have the right kind of money to lobby. Government, it's your general funds, nonprofits, it's called unrestricted funds. Get the proper cost accounting system in place. Talk to your legal counsel to understand the rules. Cost accounting is your best friend here. And it means if you lobby, You have a fund code that's permissible to use for lobbying, donations if you're a nonprofit, if you're government, general funds that you're allowed to use. Your elected officials have said go lobby, like I was told to go lobby on tobacco control 35 years ago. You've got to have the right kind of money, and you've got to have demonstrated on your timesheets that you've put your lobbying dollars to that proper kind of money. And you've done that, you can do all the lobbying you want to do. There's really, I mean, way down the line there's restrictions, but for most practical purposes there are no restrictions. Okay, County Health Department receives a grant from CDC to reduce tobacco use. May the County Health Department use federal funds to develop model legislation for cities to pass to ban smoking in public places. Wrapped up a bunch of stuff in there. What do you think? I see some people nodding their head. A lot of quick. Why are you nodding your head? We call that issue spotting. Well, we got this issue, we've got that issue. So you got to make sure that you're covering the bases. If there's a bunch of city health departments and you're coming in from the county telling them what to do, that wouldn't be in that exception. That's right. Good. And it has to be part of your contract with CDC, obviously, too. You know, you can't be using your nutrition dollars to be doing tobacco, for example, and it has to be part of what you promise. Okay. May the County Health Department use federal funds to discuss the model legislation with county supervisors, with cities within the jurisdiction of the county. So county to county, yep, good. And with the cities, you know, you really, I'm going to tell you to talk with your local attorney. That local attorney probably doesn't know these rules, I'll just be frank with you. Put them on our website, have them learn the rules. Make sure you're using all the power that you can in public health to protect community health, but get your legal counsel to agree with you on this, because it's that squishy language that you want somebody backing you up on. Good questions to ask yourself. Does the funding you have include restrictions on lobbying? Look at your contracts. What activities can I do without lobbying? Remember we talked about all that community education, presentation of success stories and best practices, coalition building, all of that. So much of what we do in public health isn't even lobbying. Which laws or rules do I need to follow for my lobbying activities? If you are going to lobby, and the most important is have the right kind of money and have a timesheet that you indicate you've used that money. Are there any state or local laws that prevent me from lobbying? And there may be. Certainly, if you're a government employee doing it on government time, there probably is. But on your private time, I tell you there's no law in the country that takes away First Amendment rights for citizens outside of work hours. You back.
I think I know the answer to this. I just want to clarify. Doing community education on how to lobby, even if it's around specific legislation, but you're not saying lobby this way or that way. You're just saying, here's, if you have an interest in this issue, here's how you would go about contacting X, Y, or Z. That doesn't sound like lobbying to me, but I
just... You're skating on thin ice, lady. Okay. It really depends. Okay. You know, if there's too many winks and too many nods, we're not telling you what to do, but if you want smoke-free, okay, you know, air, but you make your own decision, but, you know, the winks and nods don't count. I mean, they do count. I mean, you can't...
Right.
Better to do something different. Find yourself into an exception, and in the coalition meetings, you know, you make best friends with Cancer Heart and Lung or whoever can come in, or the community-based organization that has donations and just volunteers, and you get the volunteer mom from the PTA saying, "Listen, I learned how a bill is made into a law, and we need to get up to, you know, wherever and tell them what we think." Get somebody who has unrestricted funds to do that for you. Do not do it as a government official. And wink and nod and pretend that's going to... This is why you have coalitions, so you have the right kind of people with the right kind of voice and the right kind of money at the right time to get the job done. Yeah.
I actually do deal with that a lot. I work in New York City for a tobacco control policy program. focus on education during meetings, and the American Cancer Society or the American Heart Association will specifically refer to them.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to be smart about this because you don't want to be caught unaware. And again, this is why you see so much emphasis on building community coalitions. And the elected official wants to hear from those people anyhow more than the government official. They can talk to you anytime they want. They want to hear what their constituents have to say. Back to Nicole's presentation at the beginning, they want to hear from you. Somebody had their hand, yeah. We got to do something. We've got, outrageous childhood obesity epidemic in this. That's not lobbying. That's education. You're allowed to do that with elected officials all you want.
And even the public as well, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. That's one of the core roles of the health department. Yeah.
So if you're a member of a coalition and you're if the coalition does it, do you run any kind of risk because you're a member of that coalition?
Yeah, no, not really. It's the actual act of lobbying. So, if the coalition puts out a grassroots call to action, sends out a letter to all its members, and your name of your organization is listed down the side, you're going to want to be careful if you put any money into that, the mailing, the staff time that it took. You got to, every little aspect of what it takes to do lobbying has to have the right kind of money attached to it.
But the fact that your name is on there, the name of your organization is on there, as long as you didn't put money into that activity.
These are members of the coalition, does lots of things besides lobbying, but the lobbying action has to have the right kind of money to it. It's a good question. And this is why it gets really, makes your brain kind of go crazy. And again, but it comes back to the right kind of money and knowing that you've got the right kind of money, that's every instance is going to be your fail-safe. And so I just want to encourage you to think, hold that as the strongest thing in your back pocket. If you engage in lobbying, maintain accurate and detailed records. Standard time reporting is sufficient. Doesn't have to be fancy. It can be handwritten ledgers. I don't know how you keep your timesheets, but if you don't have the opportunity to indicate lobbying on your timesheets, get it. I'm talking to non-governmental organizations and governmental organizations alike. Because if anybody accuses you of impermissible lobbying, and if you did lobby, you say it's not impermissible, I'm using the right kinds of funds, now go away and leave me alone. Lobbying's allowed. Restrictions on lobbying vary. There are many allowable activities regardless of lobbying. It's important to consult your legal counsel. Here's lots of resources. You can go to our Change Lab Solutions publications, anti-lobbying. Search anti-lobbying. Feldman Tucker is that private law firm. They work with lots of government, state government agencies on these very issues. The Center for Lobbying in the Public Interest and the Alliance for Justice, both for nonprofit organizations and they don't do government lobbying restrictions, but they do IRS 501c3 philanthropy. Excellent resources. So we have webinars. Download them, take them, come get my business card if you want more information. Thank you very much. I'll stay around for 2 minutes.